out into the day, shrugging off the dust of memory, though it's soaring still above your head. It is out of sight and none shall see. Oh, there's a light. Oh, 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 there's a light. The old albatross, let it go.
Sun up till sundown, peace could not be found. Now they are under the ground.
I've gone through life white knuckling the moments that left me behind.
Welcome, world.
Refusing to heed the
DJ Synergy on my show, Culture Cocktail. Thank you for tuning in for the next hour, where I'll be covering the latest in Indian pop culture. This broadcast comes to you in three parts. Segment one entitled All in the Gray will discuss recent scandals and controversial news. Then in segment two entitled Drowning in the Mainstream, I'll unveil all the latest in hipster trends in indie culture. Lastly, segment three, I'll give you the inside look into some pop culture shit. So get comfortable and let's have a chat. So, to introduce this show, I wanted to talk a little bit about Dale Hansen. He is a sports anchor in Dallas, and on my last show, I spoke about Michael Sam's public confession announcing that he is gay. Sam is a 2014 NFL draft prospect that may become the first openly gay player in the NFL. There was a huge amount of support for Sam's openness on a very personal part of him. Dale Hansen, a sports anchor from Dallas, deserves to be commended for a speech on ABC's Dallas affiliate, WFAA. He frames it perfectly, citing all the people with history of violence, drug and alcohol abuse, and other not-so-great things that welcomed into the NFL. But there is a problem because of who someone chooses to love isn't. Hansen then goes into the history of civil rights and its role in football, recalling the time when an African American wasn't allowed to play. The parallels are very relevant and should be noted. He also discusses government and separation of government and love lives. In his closing remarks, he uses a quotation from Audre Lorde. It is not our differences that divide us, it is our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences, saying that it is time to start celebrating differences. The video clip instantly went viral, and his point of accepting the gay community was heard around the world. His viral video, which currently stands at 4,676,203 views, created such a huge hype that Ellen DeGeneres invited him to join her on The Ellen Show last week on February 14th. The video was only posted 2 days prior to give perspective of how much hysteria was produced in result of Hanson's speech. This is a great thing for the gay community, and it is even greater that such positivity has stemmed from a person being honest with not only themselves, but also the public. On The Ellen Show, DeGeneres commends Hanson for his bravery in coming forward. However, Hanson is quick to say that the true bravery and courage came from Michael Sam, who vulnerably revealed that he is gay in a pivotal moment of not only his career, but life. Hanson explains his reason for his support. I wanted to do it because it's such a great story in so many ways. I mean, you've got the best defensive player in the best football conference in America coming out gay, and that issue we've been fighting about for too long. And then wanting to play the most dominant game in America in the NFL. And I just thought it touched so many people. I appreciate your kind words, Ellen. It wasn't a brave thing. It wasn't a great thing I did. The great thing was what Michael Sam did. Sam put his potential to be drafted at stake because of his statement, which could ultimately end in a setback in his career. Hopefully this is not the case. Michael Sam is a great football player who just happens to be gay. That is where the story should stop. Moving on, Thought Catalog is an online magazine that publishes fun, smart, creative, and compelling literary. Daniel Ryan, writer for the Thought Catalog, posted a video that was created by Ukrainian women displaying the violent protests in her country. BBC News writes, Ukraine is in turmoil after its bloodiest week in decades. Deadly clashes between the anti-government protesters and police have culminated in parliament voting to oust President Viktor Yanukovych. Now, this isn't a news piece that completely fits my categories of Indian pop culture news, but the Ukrainian woman who appears in the video entitled I Am a Ukrainian was part of a team, and the video was produced by a PR company. Before I discuss the controversial uproar surrounding the video alone, I wanted to clarify the situation overseas in Ukraine. The protests first broke out after President Yanukovych's government rejected a far-reaching accord with the European Union in November of 2013 in favor of stronger ties with Russia. Thousands of people outraged that a long-standing aspiration for integration with Europe had been ditched overnight, poured into central Kyiv for a peaceful protest. They have occupied Independence Square, known as Maidan, ever since. Several developments, including police attacks on student protesters, severe new anti-protest laws, and the abduction and beating of opposition activists, caused the demonstrations to spread and intensify. For many people, there were less and less about Europe than about getting rid of a president who they believed was clinging to power and serving the interests of his own close circle in Moscow. The bloodshed in Kyiv on February 20th was the worst so far. The health ministry said 77 people had been killed in 48 hours, with nearly 600 wounded. Videos showed police snipers firing live rounds at a group of protesters carrying makeshift shields. The sudden deterioration began on the 18th of February and took many people by surprise. Both sides blamed each other, but who threw the first stone or fired the first shot is still not clear. The government and opposition had agreed a deal, an amnesty for arrested protesters if demonstrators that vacated agreed a deal or if demonstrators vacated captured government buildings. The opposition had also agreed with negotiators for the president's ruling party of the region that parliament would discuss changing the constitution to reduce the president's powers. But then the Speaker of Parliament refused to allow that on the agenda. As news got out, angry protesters marched down Parliament. The protests have been strongest in Kyiv area in western Ukraine, where there is a great affinity with Europe to the west, rather than in the Russian-speaking east and south. But there have been protests in eastern Ukraine too. Now, back to my initial reason for sharing this story. The origins of the I Am a Ukrainian video are not quite as genuine as is portrayed. The clip was produced by the team behind A Whisper to a Roar, a documentary about the fight for democracy all over the world, which was funded by Prince Malay Hikam of Morocco. The inspiration behind the documentary was none other than Larry Diamond, a Council on Foreign Relations member. The Council on Foreign Relations is considered to be America's most influential foreign policy think tank and has deep connections with the U.S. State Department. Diamond's connection to the viral I Am a Ukrainian video clearly suggests that the clip is a crude effort to convince an unthinking public that the Ukrainian uprising is completely organic and is not being instigated by Western powers, when the opposite is in fact the case. The clip is reminiscent of the Kony 2012 scam, where a viral video utilized simplified propaganda and emotional manipulation to convince millions of people of the necessity of U.S. military involvement in Africa. It's a very sensitive way to get people to react to certain situations overseas, where Americans will automatically want to spring onto whatever is socially or democratically happening over there. And just like in Kony 2012, where there was a campaign to get people to support U.S. military involvement in Uganda, it's very, very similar, where this woman she's standing in the foreground of chaos. There's men and women in the background who are suffering, and there's a hospital that it was a makeshift hospital that's been attacked, and it's a pretty enraging video if you look at it and you listen to her words, and it's kind of manipulating you. And this is just an example of how you have to really check your sources and really think about, like, is this lady telling the truth? And yes, I'm sure that her intentions were good, and she could have even been tricked into doing this. And what media does is we'll take one little snippet of a story and completely change it around. And so that's why I wanted to discuss the Ukrainian event, because when I initially watched the video, I completely believed her and what she was saying, and that she just wants freedom for her country. And then I had to do a little bit of a research check, and I found out that it was produced by a PR company, and it was completely kind of changed my mind. And my next story is about Comcast merger with Time Warner Cable. And this is sort of, it doesn't seem all that interesting or all that drastic, but it is showing us that consumption and consumerist choices are completely dwindling when big companies buy out other companies, because you have less of a choice of where you're getting your sources from and what you're paying for broadcast cable. Comcast controls now more than a third of the nation's choices of what they're going to be watching. So if you're one of the 30 million subscribers of Comcast, then it is important to know that Comcast has agreed to buy Time Warner Cable, a deal that's worth an estimated $45.2 billion. This is the latest in a series of high-profile mega-mergers in the telecommunications world, writes Jamila King, a writer for the blog site Colorlines. What does this mean for us as consumers? Well, with the merge of Time Warner Cable into Comcast, we have even fewer choices. John Bergemeier, senior staff attorney at the DC Watchdog Policy Group, Public Knowledge, explained the consequences of this sale in a statement released Wednesday, February 12th. If Comcast takes over Time Warner Cable, it would yield unprecedented gatekeeper power in several important markets. It is already the nation's largest ISP video provider and home provider. It also controls a movie studio broadcast network and many popular cable channels. An enlarged Comcast would raise costs for consumers who ultimately pay the bills. It would be able to keep others from innovating while facing little pressure to improve its own service. So yeah, it doesn't really seem like a big deal at the surface, but Comcast really, it is your neighborhood provider, and yes, you get all your channels and you're really happy with everything. You're like, oh, I'm going to tune into NBC and watch the news. I'm going to tune into ESPN and watch some sports. And then maybe later I'll watch E Entertainment and it'll be great. But if you really think about it, the whole idea behind Comcast owning all of the broadcast in America is that it does restrict what is going to be provided to you. And an infographic entitled Media Consolidation, The Illusion of Choice illustrates the lack of choice for consumers of television. It dates back to 2011, but still refines the problem of consolidated media. I'm going to list off the most outstanding facts provided by the infographic. First off, six media giants control 90% of what we read, watch, or listen to. These companies are GE, which owns Comcast, NBC, Universal Pictures, and Focus Features. News Corp, which owns Fox, Wall Street Journal, and New York Post. Disney, which owns ABC, ESPN, Pixar, Miramax, Lucasfilm, and Marvel Studios. Viacom, which owns MTV, Nick Jr., BET, CMT, and Paramount Pictures. And Time Warner, which owns CNN, HBO, Time, and Warner Brothers. And then finally CBS, which owns Showtime, Smithsonian Channel, NFL.com, Jeopardy, and 60 Minutes. In 2010, the Big Six made a total of $275.9 billion in revenue. That's enough to buy every NFL team 12 times. These six companies control 70% of our cable. AOL spent $124 billion to buy Time Warner in 2001, which is six times what Congress funded to rebuild Iraq. This data may seem a bit overwhelming, but the gist is to simplify to the public what it means for there to be emergencies amongst media giants. I have a family member who works for Lucasfilm, which was acquired by Disney at the end of 2012 year, and this was the first time I truly was able to conceive the impacts of merging media giants. I mean, the Disney and Lucasfilm are both extremely well-off and world-renowned companies, and merging them is another example of diminishing choice for our customers. While the two companies both work to produce films, they were aesthetically varied and did not have the same focal with Disney producing family-friendly content. And Lucasfilm, more of an edgier, racier company, like it always is putting out action movies and usually R-rated movies, like all the movies that my family member would work on, I was always too young to ever really listen to, or not listen to, but view and watch. And so I never really watched all the movies that my family member would make, but I would always be watching Disney because it's so family friendly and all of that. So family, or Disney as a company, has grown up with my generation. My whole generation is always surrounded by Disney, and Disney is one of the most marketed companies out there. And with the sale to Lucasfilm, they now have the whole property rights for Lucasfilm's franchise Star Wars, and they're going to take Star Wars and make another movie, which is targeted for release in 2015, and this will be Disney's most wildly criticized film to be released ever since the acquisition of the franchise, I believe. And the reason for that is because we had the Star Wars movies a couple decades ago. They were released, and I believe some of them were released about when I was born, and then there was like maybe one more a couple years after that. And so I know that all of my parents and their families, like, and all their friends, I mean, they all are big, big supporters for Star Wars, and they know, like, George Lucas is, like, such a great person for making that whole franchise, and now that Disney has ownership rights for it, people are going to be like, did Disney do a good job in respecting what George Lucas created? And that's just one example of what happens when companies merge together, and how it's really important that we always check what is the agenda of the company that owns another company. And that's just always something that I think is very interesting to look at. And that is the end of my first segment. It's All in the Gray. You're listening to Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu. And I'll resume in a couple of minutes. Don't go away. Welcome back, listeners. This is DJ Synergy hosting you for my show, Culture Crossover. In case you weren't tuned in at the beginning of the hour, I spoke about controversial stories in entertainment news, like Dale Hansen's support for Michael Sam, who may become the first openly gay NFL player in history. This has been a very big part of the NFL season for drafting, and it's even like crossed over into the whole cultural spectrum of America, and there's a lot more people getting involved with that case, and it was awesome that Hanson put out his own opinion on his segment and even got his own invitation to the Ellen Show, which is always great. I also spoke a little bit on the protests in Ukraine and the sale of Time Warner Cable to Comcast. Now we'll move over to some news in indie culture. So let's get started. It can be pretty easy to forget what the garment industry does to the environment. And from field to factory, from field to factory to laundry to landfill, our clothes are taking a huge toll on the planet at every stage of our lives. But all hope is not lost, because there is a god out there. Her name is Anka Damaski, and she is an inventor, a German fashion designer, and microbiologist who has found a way to create textiles out of milk protein. She is one example of a forward-thinking inventor who is using eco-friendly alternatives to conventional materials that are produced consciously with little to no waste. I got extremely excited when I read her story, and there's even a video showcasing her whole process and how the clothes are, they feel exactly like silk. I mean, I haven't felt the clothes, but that is what they promote, and it's all free-flowing and super, super flattering to the figure, and it is a super great way to look at an alternative, because cotton as a textile really does take a toll on our earth for farming it, and even just the whole acquisition now, for you produce the cotton and then send it over to where it is created, and then you can even, there's this whole political side to it of how the clothes are made, and you know, usually third world countries with terrible conditions, and this could really be a way to help even fix that and improve conditions for everyone who is involved in the textile process of making clothes. And when they look like this, our wardrobes won't suffer either. Damask's line of clothing made from milk is amazing, and the texture of clothes are, like I said, similar to silk and very flattering for variants of body types. Anka Damaski invented this textile while researching for chemically untreated clothing for her stepfather who had cancer. Her company is called Q Milk, and she's using the fiber for all kinds of things, from fashion to medical supplies. And not to be a downer, but if you're interested in learning more, check out Pesticide Action Network's info on cotton and the Council for Textile Recycling's facts on textile waste for starters. Going shopping, sites like Eco Fashion World and Style with Heart have great lists of brands that are getting it right and looking good while they're at it. And even just looking for about like 10 minutes, take 10 minutes to really look into cotton and how it's made and processed and then made into shirts. You can search for a YouTube video I've watched. It is about how to make a shirt or what it goes into making a shirt. I don't have the exact title on me right now. But it shows you how a shirt goes all around the world and the process of making it and then how it's sold and bought from other people. And it's really an enlightening process of, you never really think so much about what you're wearing and where it came from and what hands have touched it and put effort into making it. And we could really learn a lesson from Damaski and how she is using milk as it. And sure, it's not, like, it'll have its own negatives with it, but since it is so eco-friendly, it is a great, great alternative. And I think it's something that we should incorporate into making clothes. So that is my little preach about Anka Damaski and her work with clothes and changing the fashion industry. A story that I found about, it was on Upworthy, if you've ever seen that. It's a really funny blog site that has a bunch of like lists and videos and stuff, and it always like it's always just the fun laugh to look at, and it always gets you thinking. And I found a little article about the 18 things you have to explain to out-of-towners about San Francisco. And San Francisco is a little bit erotic, and there's always just something going on. There's always events and crazy things and bizarre stories coming from that city. And here are the 18 things that not a lot of people may know about San Francisco when they first go to tour it. But so first off, no one dresses up here for anything, not even for work. And in general day-to-day life, that guy in the red flannel and jeans is probably the CEO of a promising startup. Number two, there is, however, a certain dress code for going out, also known as trying really hard to make it look like you're not actually trying hard. And that is something that I can really relate to. When I go out, I don't want to really look like I spent hours upon hours picking out my outfit and making my hair look so perfect that I can't even wash out the hairspray the next morning. And so number three, yes, you did just smell that, and you will likely smell it three or more times today. SF is, shall we say, a little lax on enforcing certain laws. San Francisco is just a big space of different odor and body odor and certain things of the like, and it's not always the most clean place, but, you know, they're working on it, and San Francisco promotes a lot of diversity, which is to say you will probably end up seeing a stranger nude at some point. Even though they did crack down on general public nudity, those hardcore nudists are pretty defiant and even allows, and everyone is allowed to be naked during public parades. One day I had spent the night in the city, and when I walked out to go to the car to get picked up, I had found myself in the middle of a gay parade, and I guess it just happened to be one of those days where they're throwing a parade for celebrating the gays, and you know, it was awesome, but I did end up seeing a lot of nude guys walking around, and it was a bit shocking and traumatizing, but it just goes to show that San Francisco is pretty, you know, lax on everything that they stand for. And never, ever look at your phone while you're walking around, because there will be feces on the ground. Just warning. Speaking of which, there are a lot of homeless dudes, and even people from New York City will probably be shocked. In general, if you're really nice, give them some food, but most of the time, keeping your head down is the best way to avoid being chased. Next one, number seven, no one actually goes to Alcatraz or Fisherman's Wharf, but if you do go to the latter, there'll be a homeless guy who'll jump out from behind a bush and scare you. My dad is a personal victim of that. I was talking to him one day, and he said, I was just trying to walk to my office, and all of a sudden, a guy jumped out of a bush screaming, and all I could really do was give him $5 as, like, a congratulations for getting a reaction out of me. And I kind of laughed, and I was like, oh, Dad, you're such a dork. Which, shout out to my father. He's probably listening, if he remembered, because he loves his daughter. And I hope you have a good day, Dad. Number eight, nobody will ever ride a cable car if they're a local. But if you do, there's a tip. Have $6.50 on your smart card and hop on at a stop halfway through the route. The main stop is at Powell and Market, and there's usually an enormous line of tourists, and you'll be waiting there for a good amount of time, about probably an hour on the busy days. So if you do just want to live life and ride a cable car, then make sure to not wait at the bottom at Pallet Market, because it is not worth the wait. Number nine, taxis don't exist for the most part, so use Uber, Sidecar, and Lyft. They are apps that you can download, and they're a new alternative to taxi use. Number 10, no one uses crosswalks. Unless you're on Van Ness or Market, then everyone uses crosswalks. Number 11, there really is no summer here. You have to grab onto whatever weekend has 70 or 80 degree weather and treat it like it is, whether it happens to be in July or January, which is much more likely for there to be warm weather during the month of January. I've even had a birthday where it was in this, actually it would be this week in February 25th, it's my birthday, woo! And I went into the city and it was the most gorgeous day out, probably the best day I've ever had in all of San Francisco and all the times that I've ever visited it, which is strange. I don't really understand why it doesn't agree with the months and making sense of why it should be warm during the summer and not in the winter. Number 12, the guy offering to help you with the BART machine is going to ask for your money if you let him. And you can't pretend like you don't have any because he's already seen it. If you are going to a bar, going out to have a good night, you're probably going to have to wait hours upon hours unless you're a pretty girl or a pretty guy at a gay bar. And 14, straight guys and gay guys are virtually indistinguishable. If you're a girl or a guy looking for a guy, then well-dressed, hipster chic dudes will have you guessing up until the point at which you make out, and even after. It's just blurred lines in San Francisco. You can never really tell what's going on. Number 15, don't you dare say San Fran, and which leads me on to number 16, or Frisco. San Francisco has always had a little debate over what they should call it. Do you call it the Fog City? Do you call it SF? What is it that San Francisco should be called? And I don't think anyone will ever make an agreement on that. Number 17, it is anarchy when it comes to getting a parking spot. The laws and rules of society don't apply when you see a free space across the hip. Across the street on a hill. Wow, that was really difficult for me to say. Parking in the city is ridiculous, and it's nothing that I've ever had an ease with. Sometimes you get lucky, but most often not. You're usually going to end up paying like $10 for an outing out for a couple of hours in the city. So I always usually end up going on the ferry. It's always $10 back and forth, but it is much more satisfying. You do see a little bit of a view. Well, not a little bit, but you do get the view of the Golden Gate Bridge, and you get to, it's such a much more happier environment by taking the ferry in than driving in and always being worried about if you're going to get hit in one-way streets or turn the wrong way or get lost, and then now all of a sudden you're in South City, San Francisco, when you really wanted to be on 19th Avenue. Yes, that's happened to me plenty of times. And number 18, the final one, the apartment I pay for is $1,400 a month, and what am I getting? Well, it seems that I share it with four people. Rent in San Francisco is not anything that is easy to acquire, and you will probably end up sharing a really small space with a multitude of people and never have any personal space to yourself. I have friends who have told me about it who go to school in the city, which I fortunately have been pretty lucky with having spacious dorm rooms and everything in Marin. And so this list was created by Joe Starkey, and he is a writer for Thrillist San Francisco, and he's the editor and owns... He just put a little bio at the end of everything, so I wanted to read it because it's pretty cute. He owns, at last count, 54 ties, which he never gets to wear here. And so you can follow him on Twitter. He's Joe Starkey. The list was really humorous to me to kind of read and just kind of relate because I've lived in Marin, and I'm pretty comfortable with San Francisco. Like, I've agreed with the culture, not agreed, but accepted the culture that it brings, and I just really like San Francisco, and it's a great place for pretty much anyone. Anyone can really fit in as long as they want to. And thanks for listening to Drowning in the Mainstream, where I talk about current indie news and about the culture of a hipster. We're going to take a short station break. You're listening to Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu. And this is DJ Synergy. I'll be back in a few. Don't go away. The things we lost in the fire.
futures in our hands, and we will never be the same again. The futures in our hands, and we will never be the same again. These are the things, the things we lost, the things we lost in the fire, fire, fire.
I know she said it's alright, but you can make it up next time. I know she knows it's not right, there ain't no use in lying. Maybe she thinks I know something, maybe, maybe she thinks it's fine. Or maybe she knows something I don't. I'm so tired. I'm so tired of trying. It seems to me that maybe it pretty much always means no. So don't tell me, you might just let it. Oftentimes we're lazy, it seems to stand in my way. Cause no one, no, not no one likes to be let down. I know she loves the sunrise, no longer sees it with her sleeping eyes. And I know that when she said she's gonna try, well, it might not work because of other ties. And I know she usually has some other ties. And I wouldn't wanna break 'em, I wouldn't wanna break 'em. Maybe she'll help me to untie this, but until then, well, I'm gonna have to lie to you. It seems to me that maybe it pretty much always means no. So don't tell me, you might just let it go.
Welcome back, listeners. So far on the show, we have had a chat about a multitude of different topics. During It's All in the Gray, I talked about controversial entertainment news, and in the second segment, Drowning in the Mainstream, I discussed briefly the indie culture of San Francisco, as well as a groundbreaking fashion designer and microbiologist, Anke Damoski, who has founded the clothing company Q Milk, where its products are made of milk protein. That's super exciting to me. I hope that it's affordable. I wasn't really quite sure on the details for that, but it is a super cool, new, forward-thinking way to make clothes, and hope that we can further investigate and make that a more accessible thing for us. And so moving on to the last segment of the day, I wanted to start by talking about Miley Cyrus's Bangers tour. Miley might have to go back to the drawing board for her tour. She is under fire from parents for her explicitness throughout the tour, and Cyrus has been receiving numerous complaints from parents because of her Bangers World Tour. Disgruntled parents want Miley Cyrus's Bangers Tour shut down. Music Fix reports that Cyrus's management team has been inundated with complaints about the performance, saying that it is just too racy and inappropriate for young fans. The show doesn't have a rating of any kind, so children of all ages can see it if they're accompanied by a parent. While no venue has confirmed cancellation of the Bangers Tour, this show is definitely not family friendly. Listen up. Gone is the time when Miley Cyrus was restrained to market her Hannah Montana image. There's no more kind of comedy little, oh, hi, I'm a little Southern girl, but I also want to be a big pop star. That's just not who Miley is. And Cyrus has grown into a promiscuous and daring woman who isn't shy when it comes to exploring new boundaries, and she will not confine herself to what is deemed as socially acceptable. It's really something that it's both frustrating but also empowering to listen to Miley Cyrus's work and performances, and you get really, really mad, and you're like, why are you doing this? This is so weird. And then you think about it, and you're like, wow, she's just embracing herself. And at the end of the day, she's making money off us all paying attention to her and always scrutinizing her for what she's doing. Just this weekend at LA Staples Center, the 21-year-old pop star locked lips with fellow star Katy Perry, who became a hit in 2008 after releasing her song I Kissed a Girl. So just, it was really, really just a funny, funny thing, because Miley Cyrus, she kisses Katy Perry and then she goes, I just kissed a girl and I really liked it a lot, which is hilarious because she makes a total reference to I Kissed a Girl, which everyone is just like, oh, ha, ha, ha. But, you know, Miley, there she is again doing her life as she wants to live it. And according to the tour company, Live Nation, there's no truth whatsoever to any stories or rumors of venues pulling out of the Bangers Tour. Miley took to Twitter to shoot down the rumors herself. You can't say I didn't warn you. Now sit back and relax and enjoy the show. The pop princess concludes with, save your complaints for the McDonald's drive-thru when they forget the fries with that. The Bangers Tour resumes today at Oracle Arena in Oakland, California. I'm not sure, I haven't heard any of my friends who are going to attend this, but I'm sure it's going to be a crazy show. I've seen video footage of her show in Vancouver and then at the Staples Center two nights ago. And it seems like a pretty entertaining show, and yeah, it could be a little bit overwhelming or overexposed. And I even heard that she's selling rolling papers along with all the merchandise in her merchandise little tent thing at the concert. So that's always great. You just keep doing whatever you want, Miley, because no one really has any more power left in stopping you. And the highly anticipated fourth season of Game of Thrones will premiere April 6th of this year. Since the third season's end, I, along with the rest of the fandom, have been crazily waiting for the HBO show to return. And in the meantime, I've visited fan web pages such as thewinterscoming.com, a resource for the latest news and rumors about HBO's Game of Thrones. This is where I found two trailers promoting the fourth season. In case you've never read the series of six books or seen any episodes of the HBO show, Game of Thrones is an American medieval fantasy television series created for HBO by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, based on the books by George R.R. Martin. The first trailer is your first real glimpse of Game of Thrones season 4, filled with the lovely sound of various characters having their worlds shattered and the fragments ground into bloody dust. It's so dramatic and crazy, and I just love watching this show because it's nothing of this world, and they always have it just, all the detail is always to a T, and it's always perfectly done. And a lot of people will kind of scrutinize it like, oh, I can never get into it because I have, oh wow, what was that, sorry. And I've always just kind of pushed through because a lot of people will get bored with it because it's too long or whatever, but it's a really good show, and if you keep following it, you really can get into the characters and the character development, and I just love it, and I'm so excited for the new season. So Readers of the Books by George R. George R.R. Martin will recognize many scenes in this promo, but there's plenty of new awesomeness either way, including a great scene between Joffrey and his uncle/father, Jaime Lannister, in which Jaime tries to explain to Joffrey that he can't claim victory in a war that's not over yet. And Tyrion telling someone that if they want justice, they've come to the wrong place. Mostly, though, there are tons of glimpses of bloodshed and battle and people losing everything. And the second trailer, released on February 16th, is specifically entitled Vengeance. The entire series is based around different kingdoms fighting for the throne, which ultimately creates a complex basis for different characters plotting revenge. For this trailer, it has been the most exciting one yet, I believe, and the new trailer for Game of Thrones Season 4 opens quite familiarly with Arya's usual bedtime prayers, aka naming off her kill list. The trailer also gives a glimpse of Joffrey and Margaery's wedding. Tyrion in chains, Melisandre burning someone at the stake, some good old Lannister brother sisterly making out, and Dany being her divine self. "I will do what queens do," she says, "I will rule," which was, I just got the chills when she said that. I was like, you go. And the upcoming season is undoubtedly going to be brutal, bloody, and intense. In addition to the trailers, there is also a 15-minute season preview that you can find on YouTube by searching the title Game of Thrones. Season 4, Ice and Fire, a foreshadowing. This extended video teaser includes new scenes from the fantasy drama mixed with interviews with almost every member of the cast. While the trailer provides excitement for the fandom, it lacks detail of what we are going to see throughout the next season. But if there's one thing for certain, King Joffrey will raise hell. He is probably one of my favorite characters just because all he is really there for is just to be mean and cruel, and he always gets a reaction out of everyone, and he just knows how to rule, but he's also has no idea how to rule at the same time, so it's pretty funny for me to watch. It's pretty entertaining, but also a really awesome series that I share viewership with my dad and I, so we talk about it, and he's been pushing me to read the series, which once I find time in my life, I probably will hop onto that and read it. So Jack Gleeson, who acts for the role of King Joffrey, and due to the success of the show, has been exposed to the public eye and media, and a lot of people are recognizing him on the streets, and it's really something that the 21-year-old is not used to. And he was casted when he was about 17, so at that age, you're not really completely ready to take on millions of people coming at you and idolizing you. And so he was invited to speak at the Oxford Union in England on November 27th in 2013. Excuse me. So Jack Gleeson, he talks about his role as Joffrey Baratheon in Game of Thrones, but Dieter's off topic to discuss his dislike for celebrity culture that comes with the fame of acting in such a successful show. In a rant of an essay, Gleeson humorously makes it very clear why he despises the brittle pedestal one inch off the ground he seemingly unwittingly has found himself on. He comments, "What it led to was a sharp shock when I realized that, unbeknownst to me, I signed an invisible contract to enter into a strange new echelon of society. People suddenly wanted to take pictures of me on the street. Journalists were interested in what kind of socks I preferred. It was an atmosphere from which I instantly wanted to retreat. I detested the superficial elevation and commodification of it all, juxtaposed with the grotesque self-involvement it would sometimes draw out of me." He is extremely well-educated, and he is just some person who not a lot of people expect to want to be shy, and because he is an actor, they think that he is accustomed to seeing people and taking pictures with them, but really he is just a shy, normal guy. And he goes on to explain, celebrity is seen by a huge amount of people, and certainly myself for a while, as the pinnacle of society, of success. It is revered almost religiously, both the institution and its quickly growing member base. His wise words are something to take seriously, and it may be best if you personally use it as a guide for your own reflection and understanding of perceptions of how to treat a celebrity in the eyes of an average person. It is part of a culture to obsess over the people of the entertainment industry because they have such admirable talent and characteristics to strive for. However, the public is not always sensitive to the levels of anxiety placed onto the actors that are highly sought after, such as Jack Gleason. He comments on the issue of privacy. Why we become fascinated by the banal mundanity of celebrity life, you know what kind of bananas they like and stuff. They're the prescribed role models of our time, representing some form of ideal in apparently every aspect of life, be it in their professional success, cheese preference, or even drug preference. And his comments are really humbling, and you really think about how one is affected by being in the public eye. And he has made comments and decisions based on the way that the celebrity culture has affected him. And he's even stated that after the Game of Thrones, he wants to retire from his acting career because it is just too overwhelming for him. And there are stars out there who are other examples, such as Justin Bieber, who has been, he got highly, highly commodified after his career got started as a singer. And, you know, he in America was so famous and then went internationally famous. I mean, he's from Canada, so he was already pretty international when he became famous in America, in a way. But now he's doing all these crazy things and getting arrested and egging and toilet papering people's houses. And he is just an example of someone who can't take the media and how people follow him. And even the Kardashians are affected. And I am always watching the Kardashians and following their lives. And Kanye West refuses to, or not refuses, but he simply just doesn't want his daughter to be in the media and on the show. And that's something that Kourtney Kardashian, she personally chose to let her children on, but she still really resists the public and letting them into their lives because it is such an insecurity for people to always be so wanting to intervene in their lives and know exactly what's going on. And Jack Gleason's really, really good at explaining why we can't just always, like, we can't always be following every single movement that the celebrities are doing if they're not giving consent for it. And so that concludes my little commentary with Jack Gleason and his whole spiel about hating the celebrity culture, which is something that we all have to live with, but it's also something that we must respect. And I think that we're losing a little bit of respect for the celebrity and respect for their own personal lives. Moving on, BuzzFeed worked wonders for four ordinary women and granted them a chance for an opportunity to get professional makeovers in order to achieve the cover model look that so many women in our culture strive to possess. At the end of it all, the four women comment about how unhappy they are with the photoshopped images. One of the women who participated, Andronica Marquise, sums it up well by saying, "I think something that everybody should keep in mind is that it's natural to be critical of yourself. It's natural to be uncomfortable or awkward, but you just have to know that the ideal just doesn't exist." I talked about body image on my last show, as well as the abstraction of perfection that comes with photoshopping celebrities. It's possible that this will be a reoccurring theme on my show because it is so important right now in our culture. Companies and brands are beginning to wean away from this idea and that there is an ideal way to look, because the truth of the matter is that there is diversity and there is no one cookie cutter shape to signify what makes a person beautiful. And recently I came upon a catalog for Devon Hams, a British department store. The store believes that reality can sell clothes better than Photoshop. The catalog includes plus-sized women, petite and sculpted women, as well as women without a hand and one woman with a prosthetic leg. The airbrush backlash is now well underway as Devon Hams announces a ban on all retouched lingerie models shots. The high street department store puts an end to such images as they want to help customers feel confident about their figures without bombarding them with unattainable body images. These are some digital photography techniques to create unrealistic body shapes and flawless skin can make men and women feel more insecure about their natural looks and sizes. Recent research shows that half of schoolgirls as young as 12 are unhappy with their weight, while some are skipping meals in an effort to slim down due to exposure to lose weight. According to the study by the school's health education unit, and now Devon Hams calls on its rivals to ban airbrushed images too. We want other retails to follow suit and encourage positive body image through minimal retouching rather than bombarding them with unattainable body images, says a spokesperson. It's really important to pay attention to retailers who are embracing a natural look for women, because there's not enough companies out there who think that it's okay for there to be flaws in humans, and women are most highly scrutinized, but you know, both genders are always looked at like a piece of meat, and that's just not something that a civilized community and culture can be okay with. I think that not enough people are believing that it's something that is wrong and something that we can change. Too many people have accepted it as normal. And Karen Franklin, fashion commenter and co-founder of All Walks Beyond the Catwalk, says, "Fashion and beauty imagery that is honest is absolutely crucial for all women to see. Retailers have the power to take a stance on digital manipulation, so I'm delighted that Devon Hams has taken the lead here, and customer feedback will no doubt validate that this is an important step." So with that comment, that is the conclusion of my show. Thank you all for listening. It was a pretty fun one, I think, because we got to talk a little bit about racy stuff, like, you know, the culture of San Francisco, and then we got to also speak a little bit about how celebrity culture really isn't something that we can keep overexposing and always looking into the how the celebrity is living, and really listen to what Jack Gleason had to say, because he is someone who, he's well educated and he's been in the industry for a couple of years, and he's grown into someone who doesn't want to embrace the culture that celebrities are being being forced to live in. And next week, I will actually be having a show this next Sunday, because last week I didn't have a show because of the holiday, and I'll be doing a pre-Oscar show from 3 to 4 on Sunday, and then I will be back again Monday from 3 to 4. Thank you all for listening to my show, Culture Crossover, on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. This is DJ Synergy signing out, and have a great day, everyone.